Hey now, we are getting over, and I am the Silver King, Adam Silverstein, here to lead you through these hard times. With episode 572 of your favorite professional wrestling podcast. That's right, Getting Over is back once again, just under 2 weeks away from WWE WrestleMania XL, let's call it, on this episode. And we are here to break down everything that happened across NXT as it builds to what's almost a kickoff show of sorts for WrestleMania NXT Stand and Deliver 2024, emanating live from Philadelphia. We will also discuss everything that happened this week in AEW, a reduced week of television for AEW, only putting on Dynamite with both Rampage and Collision postponed due to the NCAA tournament, better known to some of you as March Madness. The Silver King is here. We have a ton to discuss, as always, here on Getting Over. So allow me to remind you straight off the top that this podcast
is all about Defy.
So please head on over to Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Leave a 5-star rating on Apple. Take a little extra time. Leave a 5-star written review. If you do, we will read it live right here on the show. And the show we will read it on will be our WWE WrestleMania 40 Ultimate Preview. So better reason than ever before to go ahead and leave that 5-star review on Apple Podcasts right now. Please do not forget to follow us on Twitter at Getting Overcast for episode drops, news, analysis, highlights, all of that good stuff. And please also remember,
I happen to love the number 5.
And I hope you do as well, because for $5 a month or $50 for the entire year, you can become an official Getting Overhead. Just visit buymeacoffee.com/gettingover. Sign up. You will get bonus audio, the fastest 5 minutes in professional wrestling, instant reactions to Raw, NXT, Dynamite, and SmackDown every week, along with exclusive news posts every Friday. And next week, it is very possible, if we do not do a bonus podcast episode, the WrestleMania Go Home Show Friday night after SmackDown, at the least, it will be a fastest 5, maybe fastest 10 minutes, a special show, of course, on buymeacoffee.com/gettingover. So again, $5 a month, $50 for the entire year. Sign up. But it's not just about getting the bonus content. It's about supporting the Getting Over Wrestling podcast. This isn't a free show, no ads, and we do it for the love of the game. So hopefully you can show some of that love back to us. And if you want to support us, but you don't want to subscribe to anything, then go ahead, DM us on Twitter at Getting Overcast, and we'll tell you exactly how you can contribute financially otherwise. But that's not why we're here today. We are here to discuss NXT and AEW. Before we get into that, one last piece of business. I do want to remind everyone of the shows in the can this week, as well as next week's schedule. We had a special 2 for Tuesday here on the Getting Over Wrestling podcast. We started the day with the Silver King going one-on-one with the man, a special sit-down interview with Becky Lynch ahead of WrestleMania and the release of her new book, Becky Lynch, The Man, Not Your Average Girl, available wherever books and audiobooks are sold. And of course, we had a hell of a WWE episode for you, breaking down everything that happened across SmackDown and Raw as the final stages of the build for WrestleMania 40 took place, the penultimate week, of course, before WrestleMania. In terms of the schedule for next week, it is absolutely loaded. On Tuesday, we will have your WWE WrestleMania 40 Ultimate Preview. We will come back on Wednesday with your NXT Stand and Deliver Ultimate Preview. No AEW coverage next week. It's just simply too much for us to do. We will do 2 weeks of AEW the following week here on the Getting Over Wrestling podcast. But after that, Tuesday Ultimate Preview and the Wednesday Ultimate Preview, we may or may not have a special WrestleMania Go Home show on Friday. Completely depends what happens on SmackDown, what other news pops up in the week across WWE. Regardless of whether we have that show, we'll be back on Saturday in the afternoon. NXT Stand and Deliver, instant analysis. In the evening, WWE WrestleMania 40 Night 1, instant analysis. We'll be back on Sunday with your WWE WrestleMania 40 Night 2, instant analysis. And then just a couple days later, your Raw After WrestleMania show, along with a breakdown of perhaps the Slammies, but certainly the WWE Hall of Fame. That, of course, will be on Tuesday. So anywhere between 6 or 7 shows in an 8-day span, that is how we do it right here on the Getting Over Wrestling podcast. But this week, we of course are here to talk NXT and AEW. So we're going to kick things off with NXT. We will move into AEW over the second half of the show. As always, there are timestamps in the episode description. So if you want to listen to us break down one brand or the other, you have the option to flip around. But as always, I hope you listen to the entire show. Now, the main segment really from NXT this week wasn't anything live on television. It was the special Prime Target three-part video package, Trick Williams versus Carmelo Hayes. And just before we went to tape the show on Thursday, it was officially announced that that will be the main event for Stand and Deliver. Not much of a surprise. What is notable, it's actually the first main event on a WWE premium live event between two black men going one-on-one since Booker T and The Rock, SummerSlam 2001. So you're talking 23 years since that happened. Ridiculous that it's taken so long, but this match absolutely deserves that spot. Speaking of Booker T, he was one of a number of WWE superstars past and present who were part of this Prime Target special. Randy Orton, CM Punk also contributed to some of the early parts. Did not necessarily expect that off the jump. It started with highlights of Trick and Melo's kind of come up in WWE. Booker talked about Trick needing to leave Melo's spotlight at some point and find his own. Melo said Trick lied about being bout it because it was always supposed to be a me plus you thing, not a we thing. And Melo said he plays second to no one. It continued with Trick revealing he has close family in Philadelphia and lived there for a period. Various folks, including Punk, talked about a brother's knife cutting the deepest when stabbed in the back. And Trick also ran the Rocky Steps in Philly. It wrapped with Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa speaking about a broken friendship and how it's so difficult not just to fight that person, but to actually go ahead and take them down. Ciampa called it perhaps the biggest match in NXT history. Cody Rhodes popped in. He predicted Trick would win randomly. No one else was giving predictions, but Cody had one. Melo said he knows nothing about carrying a brand. Trick does. He doesn't know anything about selling tickets, doing media, and being him. And then it wrapped. And they will have a face-to-face next week on NXT. Now, admittedly, you know, last week I downplayed this. I didn't think it was going to influence my enjoyment of the build to their match, which I think has lacked a little bit over the last few weeks. I was wrong. This was excellent. I wasn't surprised to see Punk because he spent a lot of time in Orlando of late, but getting Gargano and Ciampa there, Orton for multiple parts, Cody contributing, it did look like he was doing a green screen, but it added to the build. I was disappointed it wasn't longer. I think in totality it was probably 8.5, 9 minutes. I wanted 15, 20 minutes of this. They left so much on the probable cutting room floor, but there was so much more they could have dove into, like individual moments that happened throughout their run in NXT. I would have loved to have seen some of that. The entire second part of it was Trick. It didn't really feel like there was a concentration on Melo at any juncture. Like I said, I just wish it was longer, a little bit more in depth. It's one of those deals where I wish it was a special on WWE Network, now Peacock, because that's what they used to do back in the day with Prime Target and similar specials. A feud like this deserves that, but this did a lot of good repairing, for me at least, what has been a somewhat lackluster build, and now it has the chance to reach that crescendo that we all want next week when they do the face-to-face segment. Roxanne Perez was reviewing her debut vignette from WWE back when she first joined the company, discussed it at her positive attitude. She called herself gullible, and she cut up all of her old pictures with WWE superstars. She said that she's her own hero now, and she's only looking out for herself after putting the brand on her back. Roxy pointed out that she's got a title match just by breaking the rules, and while she doesn't care much about Lyra Valkyria either way, she is standing in the way of her regaining the title. On point, once again, I would say, from Roxy, this heel turn, it continues to go really well for her. It's not her fault that her natural voice makes her sound so sweet, so she does have to work extra hard on the character to counteract that, but so far, so good. It's working. Valkyria later talked about finding confidence by beating Becky Lynch and becoming NXT champion, saying she's been tested by everything that's happened since. She said Roxy is taking the easy way out by turning heel because the alternative would be taking a look in the mirror and admitting that she did actually lose in that ladder match, which is true. And she also said the title deserves better than Roxy, of course, better being Lyra. Then Lyra said that she would do whatever's necessary to retain it and keep it from Roxy. This was even better than Perez's package, I thought. Valkyria, she has truly grown on the mic since becoming champion and doing the feud with Lynch, and she was pitch perfect here. I do hope there's a big, like, pull-apart brawl or something next week on the go-home show, just something to give it a little bit more punch. But this is rolling pretty hot, as far as I'm concerned, as the co-main event of NXT Stand and Deliver. Ilya Dragunov fought Stax in a non-title match. Dragunov sold a broken finger that hurt to the touch early, but still powered through to overcome the adversity with some big moves, including Torpedo Moscow for the win. Backstage, Tony D'Angelo told Luca Crucifino not to attack, but instead to invite Ilya to a dinner at a special location next week. Luca thought that spot didn't actually exist, but the Don assured him it did. Dragunov backstage was surprised. D'Angelo never showed up. Then he got approached by Crucifino with, of course, an invitation for the dinner. When he opened the envelope, there was kind of a look of surprise on his face. This segment was exactly what it should have been, with Dragunov going over rather easily and getting an ailment through that match to kind of even the sides at Stand and Deliver. Because as we've said, the profile of Dragunov as a dominant champion and D'Angelo as a guy who doesn't even have a singles resume doesn't really line up for a title match on the biggest show of the year for NXT. I still don't care about the feud that much. That's not going to change at this point, barring some huge surprise next week. I'm curious to see if the go-home booking pays some dividends, but either way, was this better than it's been? It was better than it's been. Dijak fought Sean Spears. This opened the show. Chairman used a full case of shoe polish on his beard. Thing was dark. Dijak did a tope cannonball, impressive, but he barely avoided disaster. Spears caught him on the ropes for a top rope release German suplex, then hit him through the ropes with a codebreaker. Joe Gacy appeared from under the ring and stole Spears' chair, then he slithered back with it. Dijak then chopped the shit out of Spears and hit a discus boot. He missed a springboard elbow. Spears eventually, he noticed the chair was gone. He got caught by Dijak with High Justice for a false finish. So he added Feast Your Eyes for the win. Gacy celebrated with the chair on the announce table after the bell. This was an excellent opener. Easily Spears' best work so far. No surprise because it was against Dijak, who continues to fire on all cylinders. He's almost like NXT's version of Drew McIntyre right now in some ways. It was strange how they basically wanted to call this a qualifying match, yet they couldn't say it because the storyline was so convoluted. But the direction was obvious. It was exactly what you wanted as a building block win for Dijak. He looks strong now going into that major title match, and we'll share a little bit more details on that in a moment. Later, in front of the WWE Performance Center, Spears said Gacy is now on his radar when suddenly a chair flew off the roof and landed next to him, and Gacy, of course, was laughing. Obafemi then stepped on that chair with Gacy continuing to laugh. It's great to see that Gacy finally has a gimmick that's at least working to some degree. You know, third time's a charm, that's what they say, but that's exactly what NXT is for, don't forget. Trial and error. Couple errors, now something seems to be working. Duke Hudson fought Josh Briggs. Dijak sat for commentary. He had one like 15-second period where he made like four Ty Dillinger references, which was pretty funny. But as far as this match goes,
oh, we got two big meaty men bumping me tonight.
Hudson hit a boss man slam. Briggs quickly bounced back with a powerbomb off the ropes and the JBL lariat for the win. Femi appeared in the crow's nest after the bell, saying he clearly has two legitimate challengers in them. He called himself the Mountain, saying neither of them will reach the summit in a triple threat match. Luckily, commentary said confirmation was needed because Oba announcing the match did not at all track with the entire concept of Ava evaluating these random, not exactly number one contender matches. The work was fine between them, but it actually left something to be desired because the Dijak Spears match was such a banger earlier. I thought this was going to live up to it, and it really didn't. Now, this triple threat did get confirmed after the break, and it is the right booking for the show.
Big meaty man slapping meat.
It has a chance to tear the house down. I would say that it could steal the show if not for Trick and Mello main eventing. I doubt anything ends up topping that. But with Femi as champion, options were limited for this match. You either had to go opposite and go with someone small, like let's say Nathan Frazier, or you lean into the meat. And that's definitely the right decision here. It also makes a title change more likely, and we'll make our picks next week. But right now, I'm kind of leaning in that direction. The Wolf Dogs fought Alpha Academy in a non-title match. The stipulation here was if the faces won, they would get a chance to join the title match and make it a triple threat. Maxxine Dupri motivated the Academy in the gym. Braun Breaker apparently grew his hair out, looked a little odd. Baron Corbin popped in the locker room making fun of his tan. Then the Good Brothers came through saying they want a traditional tag team match and they got to keep their focus, make sure they win this one. The build for this, it's getting pretty late, but all of it was okay. This main event at NXT, Otis got a big meaty run, taking down both dogs with a World's Strongest Slam on Breaker. Akira Tozawa caught Corbin with a Shining Wizard, and the faces set up for a Doomsday Device style move. But Braun caught Tozawa while on Otis's shoulders for like a Spanish Fly style flipping power slam. How, Sway? The dogs then combined to pick Otis off the apron and powerbomb him through the announce table. They didn't remove the lid, so he actually kind of slid back and through it, but it was still a big move. Corbin powerbombed Tozawa, then in one motion lifted him up as Braun hit a spear and got the win. And then next week's contenders all showed up for an 8-man brawl to end the show. This over-delivered to such a significant degree. I think I'm at probably 3.75 stars, B+ for this. Same grade, by the way, I didn't give it earlier, for Dijak and Sean Spears to open the show. Both of them just real, extremely strong, entertaining opener and closer matches for a TV show. Thoroughly entertained. This finish wasn't a surprise, obviously. The Wolf Dogs needed to win. The Academy joining the match did not make any sense. It does seem immensely telegraphed that Good Brothers are going to be the ones challenging for these titles. And it makes sense, especially if Braun Breaker is getting called up. We don't know what's going to happen with Baron Corbin. Is he going to join him as a tag team? I mean, that would be a lot of fun because they're working extremely well together as a team. But Breaker is being promoted individually on SmackDown, as we've seen of late. He's had a couple matches, I believe. SmackDown going singles. So I don't necessarily think they're going to come up as a team, but it does seem like the titles are going to be taken off of them at Stand and Deliver. And you want the strongest team possible to do that. That most likely is the Good Brothers, but I'm kind of interested in this match next week, contrasting styles. And of course the winner gets to face the Wolf Dogs, which is immensely interesting. Lola Vice did a open challenge. She announced this on Twitter and cut a promo before the match with her being more serious than usual, promising to put her challenger to sleep. She also cut her hair, and it was kind of frizzy. Natalia surprised by answering that open challenge. She got a huge pop. The WWE Performance Center crowd loves Natalia. I always feel good for her when she gets that kind of pop. It almost startled her when she came out to a degree. Lola form tackled Natty in the ring. They brawled. They had a submission and pinning counter sequence back and forth. Carmen Petrovic came out to support Natty. She ate a hip attack, but ducked the back fist and hit a lariat. Another counter sequence ended with Natty catching Lola for the win. Always love seeing Natty in NXT sparingly. She gets a great reaction every time. It always means a lot to her. Vice is solid. She's kind of slow in the ring. It's very obvious she's MMA trained because everything she does is so technical. She doesn't naturally flow, and that is what she still needs to learn. It's something that Shayna Baszler had to do, adapting to this style. She's only been wrestling consistently for just over a year, Lola, but I would still say, you know, right now she's at the low card level in terms of development. I'm glad that Natty got the win because of that. Vice is really just not at the point right now where she's ready to be put over by a veteran. Thea Hale fought Jasmine Nix. This was Nix's debut match. She came out in red leather with fishnets and boots and a garter. I mean, that was the look she was going for. Definitely purposeful to draw a reaction.
It looked good, but she's got me saying, hey now!
Nix did catch Hale out of nowhere with a Pele kick, perfectly executed, better than most. I think she's a college soccer player, so that would explain it. JC Jane took Andre Chase's towel, threw it in the ring. Riley Osborne dove to save it, avoiding a match stoppage. The referee ejected Chase U for interfering and got distracted as JC slapped Thea across the face, saying they were never friends. But Hale countered Nix and snapped her arm with the Kimura lock for the submission victory. JC attacked, Thea fought back. Then Kiana James and Izzy Dame went 3-on-1 with Fallon Henley and Kalani Jordan making the save. So we'll get a 6-woman match either on the Go Home Show or Stand and Deliver kickoff. I would prefer the latter. Hale was booked well, overcoming adversity and looking strong with a really decisive finish over a neophyte. The Thea-JC feud, it's drawing legit reactions, even if it is lower mid-card. Jasmine, she was pretty decent for it being her first match. Certainly nowhere near the level of the others, but she's got years to develop, and she's just getting started. Sol Ruka got a surfing vignette comparing her knee injury, kayfabe, at the hands of Blair Davenport, with a wave crashing down upon her. She said that she's been seeking revenge for 9 months, and though she may seem carefree, she's actually pissed off. Now, they're fighting next week, with Ruka vowing revenge to make Davenport feel the same pain, promising to snatch her soul, which is a really good line. I mean, it's also her finisher name, but it just works so well. Blair then promised to put Ruka back on the road to recovery. She said she'd injure her again. Not bad from either of them. Soul's was actually better, but it was also taped, and Blair's was live. Excited for her to fight some legit competition in Blair, but it is time for Davenport to move up this card, so hopefully she comes out of this with a win. Ridge Holland showed up wearing all black with solemn music playing in the background. He was under a spotlight. He thanked a bunch of people, including William Regal and Shawn Michaels, for taking a chance on him and giving him an opportunity to speak. He said that as a rugby player, he decided if he was ever off his game, he would step away, and he feels the same way now. Not only that, he's aware about the perception around him, and it's affecting his family life. Holland said He's lacked resilience, and he made a decision that's best for his mental health and his future. He's stepping away from the ring indefinitely. He thanked WWE, NXT, and the fans before leaving to a standing ovation and thank you chants, and that was it. Now, I figured that Holland was working this entire segment. Not necessarily Salmon Jacket level, but along those lines, especially given the fact that NXT let Johnny Gargano cut a real-life departure promo a couple years ago. But with nothing fishy happening when it wrapped up, you know, color me intrigued. Now, I could see this being legitimate and done in a way almost publicly to teach a lesson to the fans for the way they act online and the way they treat superstars. Clearly, what Holland did to Big E was not did to the incident surrounding his match and outside stuff with Big E was not purposeful. He certainly did not mean to hurt him. You can make an argument that Big E didn't get enough jump and he didn't rotate enough when he was doing the move. It was certainly not all Holland's fault. But it's not the worst idea, if he is legitimately retiring, whether temporarily or full time, to put this out there and say, hey, you treated me like shit. Don't treat the other superstars like shit when bad things happen, which they do. This is a dangerous business. Now, I could see it being a situation where if Sheamus is still with WWE, it's the situation with him is odd. We'll talk about that in a moment. Maybe Sheamus does come back. He pulls him from the depths, brings him back. They tag. He gets over. Maybe there's something there. It could be part of a different type of angle, such as Holland showing up as stand and deliver and absolutely leveling Ilya Dragunov after he retains the title. He makes believe he's retiring, but he's actually not. There's a lot of ways this can go. If it is a true retirement, it's sad to see Ridge leave because nothing that happened was fully his fault. And I always thought he had a bright future. The guy was dealt some awful luck. He had that horrific leg injury in NXT. And then, of course, the Big E stuff and beyond. Talent are treating it as if it's real on Twitter. So there's reason to believe that's the case, unless it's a massive work. It's also possible he's taking an extended break and he's using this as part of a storyline. But it is interesting that he went down to NXT and basically started a storyline with the intention of writing him off. That's kind of crazy. Now, regarding Sheamus, I don't know what's going on with him. He was legitimately injured and he was out for a while. It was always my expectation that after the injury time, he would come back to WWE, work out the remainder of his contract, and maybe sign a new one or potentially leave and go to AEW. One of those things. Because what WWE normally does not do is have someone go off for injury and then allow their contract to expire while they're gone. They make them work that time. Now, things have changed in Endeavor and WWE under Triple H. So maybe all this time away, he just goes and shows up in AEW. It's certainly possible. Adam Copeland is over there. We've seen other people show up with just having left and it never being announced that they've been cut or fired or that their contract has expired. So it's certainly possible. Another possibility is he just comes back to WWE on the Raw after WrestleMania or something like that. He has deleted his Twitter account. I don't know why. He was tweeting a shitload before he deleted it, including stuff about Gunther and their great matches and I think wanting the Intercontinental title. He was tweeting pictures of himself from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. And then he just disappeared. I haven't checked, and I probably should have checked before I started talking. So I just paused the recording to check because I had not previously. He has not posted one of those Celtic Warrior workouts in about 6 months. And all the ones he had been posting, or not all of them, but many of them, had been with WWE superstars, a couple not. I didn't realize he did one with Melissa Joan Hart now that I'm looking at it. I don't know what's going on with him, but you know, he's not around. Butch, now Pete Dunne again, thank heavens, is doing his own thing. And Holland is gone. And that obviously is just interesting altogether. Ariana Grace in a social media video was conflicted trying to find the right dress for Gigi Dolin. We never got to see it, presumption being that we'll get a glimpse next week. I think she also called Dolin Georgina, which was pretty funny. Hank and Tank, Idris Onofe, Malik Blade, and Brinley Reese, Chase U, and Metaphor were all backstage interviewing to host Stand and Deliver. Metaphor later messed around in the production truck, screwed up the broadcast, and declared themselves the official host. So much for an interview process. I don't even know why they did that segment. They should have just had them coming out of the office saying they're the host. I'm actually kind of curious to see what they do because they can be hysterical. They have personality plus. I don't think Stand and Deliver needs a host, but if they're going to do it, we'll see what happens. So that wraps up NXT this week. Next week, of course, will be our NXT Stand and Deliver Ultimate Preview, but we do have the card almost completely filled out, so let's quickly go over it. We do have the Tag Team Championships, the Wolf Dogs, defending against a team still to be decided, likely the Good Brothers. the North American Championship, Oba Femi defending in a, almost called it a fatal three-way, a triple threat against Dijak and Josh Briggs. The NXT Championship on the line, Ilya Dragunov defending against Tony D'Angelo. The NXT Women's Championship, Lyra Valkyria defending against Roxanne Perez. And the official main event of Stand and Deliver, Trick Williams against Carmelo Hayes. So that's a five-match card, certainly not the strongest from NXT. I think it has a chance to over-deliver if they all go as hard as they possibly can. It probably will be the North American Championship match as the fulcrum upon which this swings to determine whether it's great, good, or perhaps underwhelming. So we will discuss all of that next week. NXT Stand and Deliver, Ultimate Preview. Do not miss it. With that, let's go ahead and move over to AEW. Now, there was no Rampage or Collision this week due to the NCAA tournament. That obviously was music to the Silver King's ears. As you know, I generally have immense enjoyment of Dynamite, but the other shows have been rough for me of late. I also found myself looking forward to Dynamite more, given I did not have as much content to consume. 3 hours less of wrestling this week made a huge difference for me as a viewer and a consumer. I much prefer just having 2 hours of Dynamite every week. And extra credit goes to Tony Khan. Dynamite had an overrun. I don't believe he nor AEW made a big deal announcing it. I think they just allowed it to happen, which is what an overrun is supposed to do. That said, for this being the only AEW TV this week, it left a lot to be desired. I've been putting over Dynamite recently as really exciting. This show was not. No Bryan Danielson or Adam Copeland or Kazuchika Okada live. Yes, I know we saw him on TV. He was not there. Zero in-ring storytelling or interview segments like they have been doing in mass during this Dynamite hot streak that we've been enjoying so much. All those in-ring segments. Now, that said, four of the five matches, and you could even say all five, were legitimately developed in storyline. That's awesome. But Dynamite is usually good for that. It's the other shows where that type of stuff is lacking. So, unfortunately, despite there being some positives this week, it was easily the least exciting episode in a couple of months, despite a fantastic main event. It's just strange to go so deep with storytelling and changing the product around, and then to do a complete 180 for this show. There is a happy balance. AEW needs to find that balance and more consistency on a week-to-week basis. With that said, let's break down the show, and then at the end, we are going to discuss the rating from AEW Dynamite, because that did come out as we're taping this episode. So the main event was Swerve Strickland against Konosuke Takeshita, number one contendership. Don Callis did a video promo putting over Takeshita and saying Swerve's house is in his neighborhood, which means he owns it. Getting tired of Callis. He's great on the mic. I just don't care about him without Kenny Omega. Swerve later got a video promo putting over Takeshita, but saying that he's fighting for history. We know you are, dog. We get it. Now, this was the main event, and the crowd was hotter for Swerve than anyone else on the show, as far as I was concerned. There were some big spots, and then an interesting one was Swerve doing a handstand hurricanrana over the top rope outside, plus a froggy crossbody for a one count. Takeshita murdered him with a forearm and caught him rolling for a front-facing Falcon Arrow before hitting a Tope Con Hero. Swerve hit a nice draping DDT from the corner, following with a corkscrew for a flat two count. Takeshita came back with a hurricanrana and blue thunderbomb. Swerve did his rolling sequence, then Swerve stomp on the apron. Takeshita was quick right back up. He countered another attempt in the ring with a powerbomb. Takeshita kind of botched like a deadlift German suplex. He had a pump knee. He missed another stomp, Swerve did, but he hit house call, then added another Swerve stomp for a false finish. Takeshita tried a pop-up powerbomb, but Swerve hit the stomp out of the air and then hit a JML driver right on Takeshita's neck. I winced. I bet many of you did as well. For the win. Tony Schiavone told us, well, if that's not a five-star match, I've never seen one. After the bell. Which I not only scoffed at, but I loved that Taz did too. He just no-sold. He's like, Tony, who gives a shit about stars? Just appreciate the match that we just got to see. Then Samoa Joe backstage was asked if that makes Swerve a number one contender, and Joe spoke as if they already have a contract signing set for next week, saying Swerve is not that man and can't match up with him. So there was a lot to like here, primarily the match itself. The crowd was good, not great. And I did wish there was more energy in the arena because the work from both of these guys deserved it. Hard hitting, expertly executed through 95% of the match. Great selling by Swerve. Takeshita could have done better in the selling part. He was up way too quick, taking some pretty powerful moves and then just rebounding from them. It's important to remember it took two Swerve stomps, a house call, and a JML driver to beat this guy. because not only did that keep Takeshita strong, which was obviously good, but it really should indicate that it's going to take more than that to win the title at Dynasty. Now, in terms of Shivani's dumbass comment, the only thing this dude could muster after the bell, someone getting paid for commentary, is to beg for a 5-star rating. I am so done with Tony Schiavone. He should have retired with Sting. Worst of all, it wasn't a 5-star match, at least not a no doubt 5-star match. And I know everyone's opinions are different, but it wasn't to me. I'm at 4.25 stars and an A match of the week across both brands, without a doubt. I hope Takeshka's okay coming out of the finish. Appropriate main event. It got plenty of time and it completely delivered for the number one contendership to put Swerve over ahead of the title match. Now, Dynamite opened with Will Ospreay against Katsuyori Shibata. This was an extremely deliberate match. They felt each other out for a while. They delivered strong style strikes, especially to start, but really throughout. Shibata dominated for the majority of the match. Commentary told us the offense was 50-50. I don't know what match they were watching. It was not. But he also no-sold everything that Ospreay did through, like, the first commercial break. He banged his head off the canvas, but was not checked by the referee. Seemed to be okay, to be fair. Ospreay's biggest move through 18 minutes was using momentum from a chest kick to kip up into a heel kick. Shibata hit a sleeper suplex, then kicked out at one after an Oz cutter. Like, what are we doing with this no-selling shit? Ospreay then hit a tiger driver and hidden blade, and he got the win. They bowed to each other, and Shibata raised Ospreay's arm. So it's definitely a high-quality match technique-wise. I could not help but find it boring. Don't forget, I loved Shibata and Bryan Danielson last week. I've been immensely bullish on everything Ospreay has done in AEW. Maybe it was like the match concept. Ospreay letting Shibata get all of his shit in because he's the veteran, making him look strong, only to come through in the end. It's not the worst match story, but after seeing Ospreay go absolutely wild in the ring all year, including two matches in AEW, it was strange to see him lack offense for so long. Shibata not selling for him until the final sequences really did not help. I'm at 3.75 stars B+, and it's probably going to be lower than everyone else that you're hearing on this. There was a video package chronicling Danielson's career after this match. Nothing we haven't seen or heard. No promo from him. And obviously, they just completely skipped over his WWE tenure. They didn't have footage for it. I feel like they could have mentioned it somehow, but I digress. Chris Statlander, Willow Nightingale, Anna Jay, and Sky Blue fought a four-way match for the TBS number one contendership. Mercedes Moné stepped out of a black SUV to do commentary for this match. She made her entrance to very light chance and a surprisingly muted reaction. The crowd was not good at all the entire show, but given her stature, it was still surprisingly light. I also want to talk about this booking for a second. So getting a number one contendership here is someone who got pinned last week in Stat and the champion's only friend in Sky. Stat, okay, you can excuse it. Sky, it did not make any sense why she would be competing to challenge her friend. Willow pounced Sky at ringside and stared down Mercedes. Anna hit a perfect superplex on Stat, broken by a Willow senton. Sky nicely countered a doctor bomb and hit a code blue for a broken fall. Anna put Stat into Sky with a gory bomb. Then Willow hit Sky with a Death Valley driver on the apron and started slapping hands with the crowd for 30 seconds, right in the middle of an important match. She eventually caught Anna with Dr. Bomb for the win. Julia Hart immediately attacked with the title because that's what always happens. Then she stared at Mercedes, who walked up to the apron, and that's it. Parts of the match were real fun. Lots of execution was clunky. My guess is most of them didn't have that much experience in four ways. Willow was the expected winner because of the Mercedes animosity. So it's going to be interesting to see how this match is booked at Dynasty and also whether Mercedes is going to be on the card, because right now it does not feel like that's going to be the case. And maybe she hasn't been cleared to compete yet. Certainly possible. It seemed like we were going to get Mercedes Moné and Serena Deeb, but she hasn't even interacted with her 3 weeks now in AEW. She was not good on commentary. Her weakness is on the mic, and they put her in a position where the only thing she was doing is talking. Again, her weakness. That is not smart. Let's move to the AEW Tag Team Championship Tournament. The Young Bucks fought Private Party. The Bucks backstage bragged about retiring Sting and restructuring the Elite, saying now the goal was to get the titles back. It was a rough, rough promo. Kazuchika Okada later stepped out of a red Ferrari, but AEW fucked up here because look, they took photos of this guy in front of the Ferrari in the same background last week, and he was shown only by himself, both at the Ferrari and then backstage, quote unquote, watching the match. And if you notice, the camera angle was Okada watching a screen and you couldn't see the screen. So he was not at the show. Period. Party did silly string over the barricade, so Nicholas Jackson did a Falcon Arrow off at ringside. Two nasty, nice spots. Mark Quinn ate a German suplex on the ring apron, but delivered gin and juice inside. Then they hit a 450 and moonsault for a broken fall. A ring bell was used to distract the Bucks for a low blow, but Quinn also did a title shot to the head for a rope break. Quinn then missed a 630 and ate like half of an EVP trigger because Nick tripped while stepping backward. There were a couple of good spots, but the match was boring as sin. Party is not over whatsoever. And I don't know. I just thought the whole thing was rough. Not really that entertaining. Best Friends fought the Kingdom. Roderick Strong came down with Kingdom, basically reminding that he's done absolutely nothing with the international title since winning it. Trent Barreto took a pile driver on the apron. Best Friends did a double stomp, assisted beach break. The finish came relatively quick with some interference, including Chuck Taylor knocking Matt Taven off the ropes before Trent caught him, Mike Bennett, in a jackknife cover for the win. Fans were happy, and really that's all that matters. It was explained that Kingdom was in the match because they wanted to unify the titles, given they are ROH champions. But shouldn't they have been saying that? Maybe I missed it. Given the size of the roster, it felt like a better or at least fresher and different team could have been in their spot. Why give them an L when the faction is supposed to be strong and they have a championship? Now that Best Friends beat them, shouldn't they get an ROH tag team title match? I guess not, since Kyle Fletcher didn't give one to Ospreay for his title, and he lost to Ospreay. So that's frustrating. Kyle O'Reilly backstage said he loves the Undisputed Kingdom guys, but he is not having second thoughts about doing it on his own. He has a match coming up this week on Collision, and he said his goal is to prove he belongs. Not bad. Adam Copeland later said in a promo that was taped last week that the Cope Open returns on Collision this Saturday with the TNT title being defended. Curious to see who challenges him. Chris Jericho shared his proposition with Hook backstage. He said Hook exceeded expectations fighting him one-on-one. He put him over big time as having great skills but being raw, so he suggested to become his advisor on his quest to becoming world champion. I don't know why they keep talking about this guy becoming world champion. He hasn't even had a mid-card title in AEW, none of the three real ones. Like, what the hell is this shit? Hook said, of course, he would take advice from Chris Jericho, but he knows who he is, insinuating that he can turn on people on a dime, I guess. The crowd didn't seem to understand it. I don't mind the booking. Jericho in an advisory role, that's a positive. But for Hook, as I said last week, the ceiling for this guy is low. And what's strange is rather than Hook increasing his charisma to match Jericho, Jericho reduced his charisma to match Hook. And the whole segment was just like two guys who didn't seem like they actually wanted to be there and didn't seem to believe anything that they were saying. It came across immensely strange. Speaking of that, Dustin Rhodes, for some reason, cut a promo backstage with Rene Paquette putting him over for having a great year so far in 2024. Dustin then put himself over the same way. I'm kicking ass. I'm putting on bangers. When Butcher came up, challenging him for a match on Rampage, it was a strange, somewhat random segment, almost like they're putting Dustin on TV to capitalize on Cody Rhodes' big week. But hey, at least they did something to give a storyline to a Rampage match. And credit where it's due for at least taking that step, as uninteresting as it might be, given the match booking. Also on Dynamite were a Toni Storm bit with the TCM host. He was the best part, refusing to say tits out when she prompted him. And Darby Allin also did a promo with Tony Hawk on a half pipe. Hawk's charity, apparently they were the ones sponsoring Darby's climb for Mount Everest, which just gives even more credence to what I was saying last week. And they were both throwaway segments. Storm, the women's champion, they're not even booking her for Dynamite. I mean, what are we doing? It's not like this was a taped show. It's not like this episode of Dynamite was airing on a different night or time or against some immense competition like the NCAA tournament. Whole episode just felt like it was completely mailed in, despite the fact that the main event was great and the opening match was pretty solid. But look, we don't talk about ratings a lot on this show. And I got to tell you guys something. We got a 1-star review on Apple Podcasts. And I don't really talk about reviews that are not 5 stars because guess what? We really don't get them. We just don't. You guys leave the 5 stars. We greatly appreciate it. Sometimes we might get a 4. I appreciate that less, but I still appreciate feedback. But I got a 1-star review this week, and I want to read you guys this review because I tweeted it, but like, it's also hilariously terrible. And that review was, Adam is an AEW neckbeard, talks NXT ratings, but not his buddy Tony's disaster. I don't know what show this person is listening to. Maybe it was one episode and that's it. Number one, we don't really talk ratings on this show unless they're notable and newsworthy. Number two, if you think I'm buddies with Tony Khan, I mean, you have not listened to the show. Now, I don't dislike Tony as a person. I'm sure he's a great person. He's done great things for the industry. I've criticized this guy plenty. And certainly It is not a situation where I would criticize NXT and praise AEW. Everyone criticizes me for doing the opposite of those things. And that's not what I do. We're fair and balanced here. We talk about stuff as it is in reality. And speaking of that, I'm going to talk about AEW Dynamite's ratings, the reality of them. Because what happened this week is that show Wednesday night got 747,000 viewers and a 0.23 demo. And that is the lowest viewership on a Wednesday since April 7th, 2021. It's 3 years ago. The lowest demo on a Wednesday since June 24th, 2020. That's 4 years ago. And that's bad across the board. It would be bad in general. It's even worse to get these ratings when you've just recently signed Edge, Kazuchika Okada, Will Ospreay, and Sasha Banks. And I'm using their WWE names because my point is that they should be attracting fans from the other organization. And they're not. And I don't know what the answer is at this point. I consistency, yes. Storytelling, yes. It doesn't seem like Tony wants AEW to be a heavy storyline company. And if he's not going to make some of those changes, I don't know that these ratings are going to go up. Maybe he's just okay with having this niche audience. And you know what? If that's all AEW was ever meant to be, then this is successful. I mean, don't get it twisted. Getting 750,000 viewers on TV in 2024, and generally they do a much better demo. They're in the threes. That's solid. That's going to make you money. That's a company that can thrive. It's way better than TNA these days, way better than anyone else was doing recently. So they should be proud of that in theory. But if you're going to outlay this much money for talent and you're going to do 5 hours of TV a week and you're going to add more pay-per-views to your calendar, then that, I'm not saying it's not sustainable. I'm not saying they won't get a TV deal for it, but it's not showing any growth. And with WWE going rocket ship right now and just exploding, that gap between the two is growing more and more by the week. It's not that long ago, folks, that Chris Jericho was calling himself the demo god, and people were predicting that Dynamite would have a higher demo on a Wednesday than Raw would have on a Monday. That is not even in the realm of possibility right now. That's how drastically these companies are heading in different directions. AEW's got to figure some shit out. For me, it starts with storytelling, comprehensive booking, consistency. Right now, we're not seeing that across the board. Maybe we will soon. Something's got to be done, because if the ratings keep going down from this, that's going to be massively problematic. There was plenty on this show. It was not a special episode like they've done the last few weeks. I get it. But you have to have normal episodes of TV that do normally good ratings. And this was a normal episode that did a below average rating by a significant margin. And even though I didn't like the episode, I thought it was their worst in months, what was booked was fine in theory. They got to figure it out. And if I had more time, if I had seen this rating earlier before we started taping, maybe I'd have more. At this point, I don't. That is how I feel coming out of AEW this week. So let's wrap it up, folks. On the way out, allow me to hit you up with the schedule going forward for us right here on the Getting Over Wrestling podcast. We'll be back Tuesday with your WWE WrestleMania 40 Ultimate Preview. On Wednesday, we'll have your NXT Stand and Deliver Ultimate Preview. As mentioned, no AEW next week. We will do a two-week roundup of AEW the following week. There's simply too much going on with WrestleMania and NXT. But we will cover everything that happened. We will not miss a match, a promo, or a segment. On Friday, we may or may not have a WrestleMania go-home show. Depends completely what happens on SmackDown. On Saturday, we will have, in the afternoon, your NXT Stand and Deliver Instant Analysis. In the evening, your WWE WrestleMania 40 Night 1 Instant Analysis. Sunday night, your WWE WrestleMania 40 Night 2 Instant Analysis. And then on Tuesday, your Raw After WrestleMania, WWE Hall of Fame, and possibly Slammies Breakdown. So as mentioned, 6, as many as 7 episodes of the Getting Over Wrestling podcast in an 8-day span. You are not going to want to miss it. And if you're thankful at all for us putting out this much content for you, our Getting Overheads, I would absolutely love it if you remembered that this show
is all about Defy.
So head on over to Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Leave those 5-star ratings. On Apple, take a little extra time. Leave a 5-star written review. If you do, we will read it live right here on the show. And if you do it now, we'll read it live on the WrestleMania 40 Ultimate Preview Edition. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Getting Overcast for episode drops, news, analysis, highlights, all of that good stuff. Please also remember,
I happen to love the number five.
And I hope you do as well, because for $5 a month or $50 for the entire year, you can become an official Getting Over head. Just visit buymeacoffee.com/gettingover. Sign up. You get bonus audio, the fastest 5 minutes in professional wrestling, instant reactions to Raw, NXT Dynamite, and SmackDown every week, along with exclusive news posts on Friday. Again, buymeacoffee.com/gettingover. All right, folks, we have a loaded week forthcoming right here on the Getting Over Wrestling Podcast. The next time you hear from the Silver King, we will be counting down the days to WWE WrestleMania 40. At this point, it is time for me to sign off and leave you with just three final words. Bye for now.